Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The only daily Premier League podcast. This is Football Social Daily.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy Wednesday and welcome to the Football Social Daily. Congratulations, you've made it to the middle of the week. And your reward, you might ask, well, that is that the football simply does not stop. Champions League action right the way across the last 48 hours as all four Premier League sides test themselves up against the great and good of Europe. And right here on FSD, we have got you covered. In part one, we'll be taking a look back at last night's action as it was a double win for the Premier League. Liverpool edged out a 3-2 win over Atletico Madrid, but it was a controversial night in the Spanish capital. A little bit less exciting and high profile for Manchester City as they cruised on to a 5-1 win against Club Brugge. Right, that's all to come in part one of the show. That's all coming up first. And then in part two, we are in preview mode on tonight's action. Under pressure, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer plays host to Atalanta at Old Trafford, and Premier League leaders Chelsea welcome Swedish side Malmo to Stamford Bridge. Right then, plenty to get through on today's show. My name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me, we have the regular Wednesday crew. So that means Mr. Ian Brannan. Ian, how's things?
Yeah, good, thank you. The triple award nominated Ian Brannan this week, including for my work being the voice of Pot Noodle in nicer supermarkets. Yes. So,
I think congratulations are in order, definitely, Ian. Well done.
Yeah, more silverware this week than Tottenham in a decade.
And we also have Matt Pidd. Matt, any accolades, any trophies in the cabinet this week? Any nominations that we should know about?
No, apart from that I have the best bacon butty in Hardwick, I'd say, for my cafe. It is.
To be honest, yeah, I think if we're comparing things on a wet Wednesday morning, I think that's a pretty strong one to go with. Right, we're going to get stuck into the games from last night. Atletico Madrid, Liverpool, 3-2 win for Liverpool away at Atletico. Ian, before kickoff and in the last couple of days, there's so much narrative surrounding this game. Obviously, Liverpool winning the Champions League at the Wanda against Tottenham, then losing to Atletico in the Champions League in that last game before football was effectively closed down due to COVID-19. And this was kind of billed as a bit of a clash, but it was probably going to be the immovable object against the irresistible force and maybe not a lot of give and take. That was absolutely thrown out of the window. 2-2 inside the first half an hour. Absolutely mad. You think of Liverpool as this attacking force, but we know that Atletico traditionally are so hard to grind down and get goals against. Is this a mark of just how well Liverpool are playing at the minute that they managed to get two goals against probably traditionally the most tough, mean defence in European football?
Well, yeah, I think the big difference, of course, is Mo Salah, who's an unstoppable force in whatever competition he's playing in at the moment, isn't he? But that mixed with a game of mistakes. You know, we all talk about football being a game of skill and passion and all this, but let's not forget the mistakes often lead to those moments of brilliance as well. And there was mistakes all over the shop from both teams, and it allowed for a, you know, what you would call an exciting match for the neutral. Probably have your heart in your mouth if you're a supporter of either of those clubs. And, you know, it had its moments, didn't it? And for Salah as well, setting a club record, 9 consecutive games. It's a feat unmatched in all the great goal scorers of Liverpool's history. You know, he's firmly up there. So whilst the game was littered with mistakes, it was a game for Mo Salah to really shine once again. And, you know, he is, as I say, he's just one of the all-time great strikers. He's proving it. He's playing before our eyes right now. I do wonder, I was watching him last night though, and you know, I know that Liverpool are a big club, but you know the amount of ridiculous money that's kicking around these days, you do wonder if there's going to be some big attempts from some places around the world to try and lure him, because doing what he's doing is, you know, he's firmly in the window of every single person in football. And how long can Liverpool hold on to him, dare I say? Because I know Liverpool would love to think that they are you know, an unstoppable force themselves, but I think when they're not in the crazy league, are they, in terms of the cash? And you wonder how long before a Paris Saint-Germain, or even, dare I say, Newcastle have a go. But I think it's wishful thinking for the time being, but I think Champions League football is the big difference. But, you know, he's doing it on all feet. And of course, a match, of course, Liverpool saved by VAR as well. So it had it all.
Yeah, Matt, when you look at Salah's performance, as Ian points out, he is in absolutely wild form. Just looking at his numbers so far this season, 12 goals in 11 games for Liverpool, 2 again last night, although one of them may possibly have gone down as an own goal or a James Milner little clip, because when you've got a player like Salah in the type of form that he is, you've got an almost guarantee at one end of the pitch that he's going to get a goal. But we saw last night, as Ian mentioned, a couple of mistakes at the other end, and Virgil van Dijk's come back into this team, he's come back fit. Last 5 games, Liverpool have only kept 1 clean sheet, and it's been Matip and Van Dijk as a partnership in both of them. They shipped 3 against Brentford, conceded against Porto, obviously 2 against your team, Man City, clean sheet against Watford, and then 2 last night. And the 2 goals from Antoine Griezmann both came as results, one from Matip and one from Van Dijk, resulting from mistakes. And Antoine Griezmann is a fantastic striker. He possibly could have had 4, maybe even 5 goals before half-time. This is not something that we associate with Virgil van Dijk and Joe Matip. They're absolutely supreme performers, but up against an elite striker like Griezmann last night, they were exposed, and they're not as watertight as they have been in previous seasons.
No, and it could be a worry for Klopp going forward, but we have to remember Van Dijk's coming back from a really serious ACL injury, and we all know that some players, no matter how good they are, no matter how world-class they are, can struggle to come back as the player they were before that. You know, when they come back from the injury itself. And, you know, Liverpool, as much as they are conceding goals right now, they're getting the job done. And it was a hostile atmosphere at the Wanda last night. It could have, you know, we went 2-0 down. It could have just gone to 4-0 and then everything would have fell apart. But Liverpool showed great character in coming back the way they did. You know, they come back before the half an hour mark. Salah, he broke Gerrard's Champions League goal scoring record last night, if I believe. I think it was his 31st in the Champions League for Liverpool. So yeah, that was a decent night for Salah, and for me he's the best in the world right now on current form, I'd say. Yeah, I mean, Gomez could have played last night as well, Matip and Van Dijk. You know, it was just one of them nights. It's the atmosphere, it's the stadium, it's the team they're coming up against. Sometimes you're going to have these nights where, you know, it doesn't work exactly to plan on from a defensive point of view, but I think Liverpool will just be more glad that they came away with the win rather than conceding the 2 goals. You know, they was lucky to not concede the penalty at the end. Jota with the foul, I think it was on Jimenez maybe. He fouled him. For me, it was a penalty. It doesn't matter if the contact wasn't, you know, it wasn't deliberate or anything. It was contact in the box. The player's gone down. Jota got the wrong side of his man. The referee's gone to the monitor and obviously he's seen it differently to everyone else. And yeah, it was Liverpool last night. But sometimes you need these things to go your way in the Champions League. We all know the Champions League, it's a competition where, you know, if luck is on your side, you know, that's when things can go your way. And yeah, Liverpool will be really happy to come away with 3 points last night. It's 3 from 3 from them now.
Looking at some of those calls after the break, Ian, the first half was full of goals, full of action in terms of positivity with some fantastic football. Few errors, which we do like to see as a neutral, and 4 goals. But after the break, it was all about the referee, Daniel Siebert. So I'm just going to break this down in terms of decisions. Antoine Griezmann, the hero of the Atletico first half, 2 goals. And then just before the hour mark, he decides to have what I was calling a bit of a brain fart and goes in with a karate kick on Roberto Firmino. Just absolutely crazy challenge. And online there's been comparisons to Nigel de Jong, and particularly Ian from United fans, about Nani back in 2013. If you don't remember it, he launched a kind of similar one on, I think it was Danny Carvajal, got himself sent off, Real Madrid win at Old Trafford and go through to the next round. Cristiano Ronaldo, incidentally, scoring the winner that night. I don't know whatever happened to him, but was this the right call? The argument always comes in these situations of Griezmann was looking at the ball, it was coming over his shoulder. Yes, his foot is high, but he can't be expected to see Firmino behind him. For my money, it's a red card. Whether he meant to do it, whether he was dangerously looking to injure Firmino, doesn't really matter. His foot was way too high and he deserved to go.
Yes, he deserved to be sent off. Because, yeah, all right, he couldn't see what was coming and stuff, but you don't need to have your foot that high in the first place, really, do you? You know, I mean, yes, if you're bringing a ball down, but there's players around him. He can see. I've got a photo. I'm looking at him now. His face, he is looking at his foot. He can see that his foot is high, and he can also see there are not one but 2 players in front of him. So I don't buy the fact that it was necessarily accidental. Yeah, it all happened really quick, but he knew that he was under pressure, that there was a player coming for the ball, that Firmino was in the area. So why would you have your foot sort of nearly at shoulder height? Well, certainly, and that's Griezmann's shoulder height. I mean, it's
he's a midget.
Firmino's ear, you know. So it's like that is you're asking for it. And whether it's right or wrong, if you put your foot in that zone, you know that there's the chat. You know, in the same way as if you have your hand out in a penalty area, you know that. You might well get caught. I mean, he proper got him on the face. I can't imagine it was very nice for Firmino. I mean, if that was me, I'd be rolling around for a good 20 minutes. So, you know, yeah, it was the right call. But it's a shame, isn't it? Because he was like hero and villain all in one, because, you know, for Atletico, scoring goals and playing really well up to that point. And, yeah, how things turned south, you know, so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I seen De Jong having a laugh about it on Twitter last night, saying, I'm sure I've seen that sort of challenge somewhere. You know, he got away with it on the biggest stage, on the cup final. Yeah, he can't have any complaints, really. I mean, I was joking about Griezmann's size there. You know, he's a bit of a midget. But no, it's... No, it's a straight red, regardless of intent. You know, it's a dangerous challenge. You know, Firmino, you know, he could have had his teeth knocked out and that would have been, you know, the end for him. You know, have you seen his teeth? Jesus, oh God, they're brighter than my future. You know what I mean? he would have been absolutely gutted about that. Yeah, it's just one of these things. There might not have been intent there, but you can't really have any complaints about it at all.
It was a historic moment as well, by the way, in Champions League history, because that was the first time Antoine Griezmann is the first player in Champions League history to score 2 goals and get sent off.
Mm. Wow, nice stats.
Yeah, boom, yeah. We're back with the stats. Yes.
Love it.
Ian,
love
you're
it.
Making me look bad. I'm going to have to fire up Wikipedia to prove that I still know some bits and pieces. Right, alongside the red card, yeah, there's 2 other big calls. A penalty at both ends, one given and then taken away. So, Ian, I just want to take a look at these as well, because the action just didn't really stop in this one last night. 78 minutes on the clock. Diogo Jota goes down under Mario Hermoso's challenge. Penalty given. Mo Salah steps up and bangs Liverpool in front in what's turned out to be the winner. Then 4 minutes later at the opposite end, Jota decides to get his hands all over Jose Jimenez. Siebert gives the penalty, then after a big long check on VAR, overturns it. This created a massive amount of controversy. So Ian, I'm going to go to you first on this. What was your take on the penalty that was given and the penalty that was and then taken away?
I think the penalty that was given was... You know, it seemed like a fairly clear penalty to me. It was a bit of a clumsy challenge. And yeah, it was a penalty. So I wasn't surprised to see a penalty awarded in that circumstance. The other one, I mean, the camera angles that I saw weren't really particularly conclusive. And I know that this was the one that obviously VAR, the referee went over to the side of the pitch and had a look at it. But it was... I mean, I'm not exactly sure exactly why it was overturned because we don't have the benefit of the referee with us to explain his thinking. It was one of those... There was clear contact by Jota. And with that in mind, I think 99 times out of 100, you would expect that to be given. Just because all the ingredients are there. Player goes down, he's got an arm on him or whatever, and you know, it's one of them where, yeah, it's a penalty. I think if it had been awarded as a penalty, we would be saying simply that Atletico got awarded a penalty because of a clumsy challenge by Jota and then whatever happened from there. And I don't think we'd be kind of agonising over the penalty. So the fact that we're debating it means that perhaps the decision was wrong. As I say, that's what the referee did. That's what VAR's for. Maybe there was something in there that hasn't been explained, but I haven't seen that explanation anywhere else yet. But yeah, well, you know, Liverpool got away with one. But these things even out over the season. You know, these kind of decisions, don't they? We always say it, and I'm sure further down the line, Liverpool will be hard done by in some form or another. And you know, the planets will be back in alignment again. But it's just football, isn't it? It's part of the drama. Part of the drama. And we always say sometimes about how VAR is ruining the game because it's too clinical. It just shows that actually VAR can produce just as many bonkers decisions as referees on their own. So
one of the interesting bits from this, Matt, anyone that watched this on BT would have heard Peter Walton as the referee and refereeing expert.
Peter Walton, where, here he is.
If that's what we can...
Say that in inverted commas, expert.
I've never... Until Peter Walton started being the expert referee on the telly, I've never heard of Peter Walton as a referee. Could be anybody.
Maybe he was just a Sunday League referee, maybe he's just been brought in for this. But Matt, his point on this was also quite confusing, because anyone watching this, his statement before the Atletico penalty was, this is a penalty. There's cause to give a penalty. He's going to give a penalty after looking at VAR. And then Seibert went the other way. But he tried to kind of say that in the penalty that was given against Hermoso on Jota, there was a demonstrable example of excessive physical force, whereas the one given in Jota's favour in the end, where he pulled down Jimenez at the other end, that was more of a borderline call. Is that where we fall down with VAR? Because the penalty that was given, it was demonstrable that Hermoso just barged into the back of Jota, whereas in the other one, it's this example of, do you deem that to be excessive force to go down for a penalty? And then we do open up a bit of a Pandora's box and goes back to the Griezmann thing of, well, one person's excessive force is one person's get up and get on with it.
You see, this is the thing with VAR. It's still open to interpretation. It ultimately comes down to opinion at the end of the day, so it's never going to iron out every single little mistake. It's still going to cause controversy. And, you know, the Hermoso one, yeah, it might have looked a little bit more clumsy. I mean, the ball was hooked over. I think it was from Alexander-Arnold, and he had no bearings of where he was, and he's just brought him down. It looked a lot more clumsy than the Jota one. The Jota one looked a little bit more innocuous. But having said that, there's both of them have reasonable contact to cause a penalty, so I can't understand why one's given and one isn't. And you know what, the referee there has some cojones on him to go over to that monitor with that in that cauldron, you know, of that atmosphere, that stadium, and then to do the sign and then not give it. You know, I was very surprised. And you got Peter Walton saying, oh well, I disagree with this. It's the first time I've ever heard him disagree with the decision that the referee's come to be honest. I think that was history made on BT Sport last night. He very, very rarely goes against what the actual official on the pitch has given. But yeah, I was surprised. I was surprised that wasn't given. But then, like we were just saying, these decisions iron themselves out. The VAR is still open to interpretation. It's still got to come down to an opinion at the end of the day. And the referee on the night just deemed one a penalty and one not, even though one looked a little bit more clumsy than the other. But then, like you touched on there, Fergal, the one with Griezmann, you know, there was no intent there, but it still happened. So why is one decision not given and one not, even regardless of intent? So no, it's still causing controversy, VAR, and I think it's going to continue to do so for many years to come.
Yeah, so from controversy in Madrid to calmness in Bruges, Matt, Manchester City 5-1 win away at Club Bruges, obviously bouncing back from defeat to PSG last time out in European action. That means that Pep and the lads are back on track in terms of pushing on for the next stage, for the knockout rounds. Looking at this as a performance, 2-0 up at half-time, 3-0 up before the hour mark, and then just the absolute cruise control pretty much from the start. You must have had your feet up watching this, because I think most of the Manchester City players did as well.
Before the game, you know, I was thinking, you know, Bruges have proven they're a tough side. You know, they've already taken points off, you know, PSG and Leipzig, and plus they have a decent atmosphere at their place, which always helps when you've got a big game at home. They're unbeaten in all competitions at home as well this season, you know, so it was before the game, I was thinking, you know, it's going to be a tough game. They've got players like Menangkan, De Ketelaere and Lang as well, look dangerous. You know, City just, you know, as soon as the ball kicked off, you know, we had the ball in the net twice before the 20-minute mark. Obviously, both goals were disallowed. Grealish with a foul on their centre-half, and the set-piece one was rather unlucky because it looked like a clever routine, but Laporte, unfortunately, just strayed offside. Foden showing his quality with the first goal, the ball over the top for Cancelo, who's shown a centre-forward's composure. Maybe we should be playing him up front. You know, Cancelo, he took the ball in his chest and made the goalkeeper brilliantly. Mahrez, just before half-time, it was some really nice interplay with him and Kevin De Bruyne. The ball broke to him quite luckily, actually, and yeah, he got the penalty and he slotted it away perfectly. Second half, you know, we just continued where we left off with the first. It was just some really lovely build-up play. Again, the way we had the ball all night, it was just, with and without the ball, City were just absolutely ridiculous. Bruges didn't know what to do. They looked dumbfounded, and every time they got the ball, Bruges, you could just see just how, you know, tired they actually were. City were just absolutely just mesmeric when we had the ball. Yeah, it was more great football from City. Kyle Walker then going through, making his underlapping runs as he did do all night. Him and Cancelo both in particular, they caused Bruges so many problems with them underlapping runs. I think it was Les Scott and Peter Crouch touched on it at half time. It seems that City have just sort of flipped the script with the way they do that. It was a lovely ball through from De Bruyne. Walker just charges through, puts it through, 3-0 with a tidy finish. And then, you know, Guardiola can then afford to make a couple of changes, you know, rest some legs, Laporte and Bernardo making way for Gundogan and Ake. And it's they're not bad players to bring on when you 3-0 up, really, are they? And then you made two more changes. You know, Foden, Kevin De Bruyne earning the rest, and Sterling and Palmer coming on in their place. And, you know, I was really excited to see Palmer after his double performance for City over the weekend. You know, he came on in the Premier League against Burnley and then come on for the under-23s over the bridge and scored a hat-trick. And it only took him a matter of seconds before he made his mark on the game. It was a very cultured finish on his left foot. His first touch to set himself was fantastic. And, you know, Sterling found him with a really nice pass, and it was lovely to see the two substitutes combining. And Sterling, you know, he had a couple of decent chances in the game as well. It's hard to watch Sterling at the moment because you can see him, he just really wants it so badly. There was a couple of opportunities last night where he could have squared it to someone in the box. You could just see it, how much he wants that goal. He just wants to get that off his back, but it's just not happening for him at the moment. Rodri, special mention for him last night. He was replaced by Fernandinho, but for him this season, he seems to have just been revamped. He very rarely loses the ball nowadays, and he just seems to be in the right place, you know, 90% of the time. He's got the highest completed passing percentage in the Premier League this season with 94%, and it looks like Guardiola's turned him into like a Sergio Busquets 2.0 at the moment, and he really is showing his quality. And then to round off the night, fifth in the night, Mahrez, lovely little ball through, and he just finishes it clinically. It was, yeah, like I said, feet up probably at half time. City just showed the quality. We played a number of players up front. It was fluid. It looked really good, but I think we still are missing that centre forward. But even though we're bagging loads of goals at the moment, it's lovely to see. There was just a few instances last night where it was just a few wasted opportunities, particularly before half time. But yeah, cruise control from the Blues last night, and a thoroughly deserved performance. It was very professional, and yeah, 5-star on the night.
We're going to come back to Cole Palmer in a minute, Matt, because I want to get your take on him. But Ian, this idea again of the number nine, or the lack of number nine, is going to keep coming up for Manchester City. But when they turn in performances like they did last night and score five goals with four different goal scorers, Phil Foden started as a false nine last night through the middle with Grealish and Mahrez either side of him. You then have De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva bombing on to look to link up. And the amount of interchanging in positions gave Bruges a headache right the way throughout the game, because Foden was there, then he would pull out, Silva would go, Kevin De Bruyne would run on, Riyad Mahrez was central at some times, then obviously the young lad Cole Palmer came on late on, you had Raheem Sterling coming off the bench. When it goes well, when it goes right in these types of situations and you batter somebody and win 5-1 away from home in Europe, everything looks perfect. But as Matt touched on there, City creates so many, many chances in these types of games. When the level of opposition is higher, either in certain Premier League games or in the latter stages of the Champions League, those chances are going to dramatically reduce. And then the argument of having somebody clinical inside the box to finish chances is going to get resurrected. Or is this idea of just, we've got so many players that can score, by weight of numbers, eventually we'll get a goal?
Yeah, I think that's it. They are a team that obviously can play very well. You know, there's a lot of money being spent on it. We're talking some of the best players in the world. And the thing about the number nine, you know, it's kind of old-fashioned, I think, that whole kind of, you're a number nine, you know, like, because he's the only one that can come on and score a goal. That's not how Man City play. They have a number nine position, and as you say, three or four of them can move into that, and they rotate around. When they need to defend, they'll switch to a defensive kind of formation. When they want to attack, they'll change things around and drop into the slots that are required. There's many of them that can score in the team. Yes, having an out-and-out proven goal scorer might be a good thing, but, you know, if you're battering teams in the Champions League 5-1 or whatever, and there's a stat here that this is the 19th time that a Pep Guardiola side has scored more than 5 goals in the Champions League, and that's obviously not just with Man City, that's with Barcelona and so on as well. So in this competition, even without having an out-and-out striker in all of these squads, he's battered people year after year. So it's obviously working. And I think the crucial thing is, and this is another interesting thing that I saw, that it's about the chances being supplied. As you say, I think they can all take the chances, really. You know, they're not bad players at all. Kevin De Bruyne, I think, is the key to a lot of this. He's got the third amount of assists in the Champions League since the start of 2016, which is when he first started playing in the Champions League, which puts him on par with people like Neymar and Mbappe. You know, so he's that important. And maybe it goes under our radar a little bit. We get very excited about Neymar and Mbappe, and if they move to the Premier League, how big a deal that would be. But stats-wise, you know, Kevin De Bruyne is right up there with the very, very best, creating these chances. And that's what's making life easy. If they didn't have Kevin De Bruyne in the side, yeah, maybe they might be struggling a little bit more. But I think he is the, you know, while ever they've got him, I'm not sure they do need an out-and-out number nine.
Just quickly before we take a break, Matt, I want to get your take on Cole Palmer. The story from the weekend was him getting a few minutes for the senior side and then, as you say, running across the road, which is probably a bit dangerous because it's a main road. Hopefully he took the bridge.
There's a bridge there, isn't it?
hopefully he took the bridge, the safer option, to then go and knock in two for the under-23s. Got off the bench last night, got his first ever Champions League goal, scored in the League Cup earlier this season, and Guardiola will give him minutes. Obviously, he's not going to solve the number nine conundrum with Cole Palmer, but looking at last night, looking at the sheer weight of games that City are going to play between now and the end of the year, does Cole Palmer have a role to play? And if he does, can he have an impact? Can he play in the Premier League? Can he get goals in the Premier League?
I think in particular cup competitions is where you're going to see more of Cole Palmer right now. But it's just testament to Pep Guardiola again, because I think we're just seeing what's happened with Phil Foden all over again, but with him. He seems to have been managed perfectly. You see him when he comes on. This is why he keeps them training with the first team, because it's just seamless the way he integrates them in. It's like they've been playing together for years. You see him come on there and he makes a lovely little bit of movement, hangs on the edge of the box, knows where Sterling's going to play it, and he just sweeps the ball into the far corner. And if you watch his goals for the under-23s, that's just typical Cole Palmer. It's what he does. And he has this coolness, this calmness when he gets the ball at his feet. He doesn't panic. You can tell he's being coached by Pep Guardiola the way he's got him. And right now, if the way things are going, like with the amount of games we're going to be playing, we all know this is why the best teams in the world build big squads now to compete on all fronts. And we all know Pep Guardiola wants to win every single trophy possible. So why not? If he does get a chance in the Premier League, I have no doubts whatsoever that Cole Palmer will come in and he will do the business. It's just obviously injuries, etc., stuff like that. I don't think he gets in ahead of a Bernardo Silva or a Kevin De Bruyne or a Phil Foden at the moment, but to have him in your squad in general, and he's only 19 years of age and he's showing this kind of maturity already, it's nothing but excitement for me as a Man City fan. He's another local lad coming through. He's from Wythenshawe, that's where I was born. It's been a while since City have actually, you know, started doing this stuff. Foden sort of like set the precedent now with the young lads coming through the academy, and there's a couple more that are in there as well. We've got Wilson Esbrandi, he's another one who'd look really exciting. He scored for City's under-23s last night against Bruges. So yeah, it's exciting times to be a Man City fan at the moment, particularly with the young talent that we've got coming through.
Yeah, a bright future for Cole Palmer, and you know, he's not got a bad example to follow in Phil Foden. Right, guys, we're going to call it there. We're going to take a quick break on the Football Social Daily. After the break, we are getting into preview mode. Manchester United at home to Atalanta tonight, and Chelsea welcoming Malmo to Stamford Bridge. We're going to be looking at both of those games in just a second.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Hello and welcome back to the Football Social Daily Wednesday edition of our podcast. Don't forget, if you're a regular listener to the show, or if you're a new fan, if you click subscribe, you can get a brand new episode every single day. We are the only daily Premier League podcast. Every 24 hours, we have a fresh show. Right, before the break, it was reviews. Now we are taking a look at previews. Two more Premier League sides in action in the Champions League tonight. Manchester United at home to Atalanta and Chelsea at home to Malmo. Ian, we're going to look at Atalanta and United first. And in particular, we're going to look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer because he's getting pricklier and pricklier with journalists. Before the international break, he was very upset after the Everton game in his post-match press conference. That carried into the Leicester defeat this weekend, and he's getting very, very annoyed. He's actually taken it maybe even to a little bit of a higher level, and he's called out Jamie Carragher for some of his comments, saying that he's annoyed at Carragher doubting his ability. He has no doubt in his ability as Manchester United manager or the club's faith in him. Is the situation starting to get to Solskjaer a little bit? He knows that results are not going their way. Just one win in the last five in all competitions, two in their last seven. They've slipped down in the Premier League. The Champions League is another route for them to get some success this season. Is Solskjaer starting to feel the pressure a little bit? And we're seeing that in his responses to questions.
It's always a sign that things are not quite as comfortable, isn't it? If they're starting to get a bit shirty with not just pundits or reporters, but you know, people who are well known in the game like Jamie Carragher. And when managers start having a pop at people like that, I'm not saying it never ends well, but you know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not doing absolutely spectacularly, but you know, yeah, they took a hiding at Leicester, but before that they've gone on quite a, you know, long and beaten run. It's not like we're not talking a, you know, a team here that are floundering around the bottom of the table. Yes, it's not perfect, but it's not a disaster either. But it's just the way he's handling, as you say, handling the criticism. And I think some managers, if this was Jurgen Klopp, for example, I think it would probably bounce off him a bit more, or he would give a more firm answer and just sort of shrug his shoulders and go, yeah, whatever. Whereas he does seem to be taking it a bit personally, which sort of suggests there's a little bit of stress there. But do you know, I think that this is the, and I know that people complain when I mentioned this last week, the three or four listeners that paid attention to what I actually do say, which is double the usual amount, I've got to say, that I've been saying, and they say that you're anti-Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm not anti-Cristiano Ronaldo. What I'm saying is that when they signed Cristiano Ronaldo, they also opened a Pandora's box of all sorts of other baggage that comes with him just being
there.
I'll
back you up on that one, Ian.
You know,
100%.
And I said that at the start. I said that when it was a rumour that they were going to sign him. I said, you know, it's a Pandora's box. Yes, he's a wonderful player, but there's so much other stuff that goes with him. And I'm not saying that it's all bad, because there's some of that's good. You know, you're going to sell loads more shirts. There's a load more people are going to want to come to the games because he's there. He's an icon of football, one of the greatest players of all time. Fantastic. But with that comes especially at Manchester United, where you're blessed with riches. You've got all sorts of world-class players in the side, that you're going to have to leave one of them out. And you're in this situation where, whether the name is Cristiano Ronaldo or not, it could be Mbappe, it could be Neymar, for example, another world-class player that you put in that side. You're going to have to tell Bruno Fernandes or Cavani or Rashford or whoever that you haven't got room for them, that they can't play every week. And I think that balancing that in the background is going to be a problem, because I've got to say, and I'm saying this purely because he is my captain in my fantasy league team, that Cristiano Ronaldo has contributed nothing for a month.
It's not just Solskjaer that's facing questions as a manager about Ronaldo. It's also Ian Brannan. He's got his fingers in every single pie at the moment. Cristiano Ronaldo, as Ian mentions, Matt, is going to play tonight. We can be pretty confident that Ronaldo's name will be on the team sheet. But the other big fitness call is Harry Maguire. Started against Leicester, clearly wasn't fit. He'd obviously missed the international break with England. He didn't go away. United have got this massive run of games coming up. Liverpool this weekend, Spurs, Atalanta, and then the Derby on the 6th of November. Harry Maguire's return to fitness needs to be managed really, really carefully. Is it worth pulling him out of this game tonight, playing an Eric Bailly in there, or Victor Lindelof, starting them as a pair, because they cannot afford to not have Maguire against Liverpool this weekend?
I don't know, because United and Ollie, they need the result tonight. They're up against an Atalanta side who have bags of quality. Atalanta are without the captain Toloi. They've got no Gozens, no Hatabua, but they've still got players like Ilicic, Zapata, Muriel, who can really hurt you with their quality in front of goal. And coming off that Leicester result, Ollie, like we were saying, he's under pressure. So United do need a result tonight. Plus, if Atalanta win, they go 4 points clear of them. Atalanta will be on 7 points. United will be left on three. So there's a danger that they could be cut adrift if they just continue to drop games. So United, for me right now, need to play their strongest possible side. They've got no Varane, who's a massive miss, and Martial, less so, but he's another player that can contribute in front of goal when he's in the mood. But no, United, they really need to just play the strongest team possible. They're a team that rely at the moment, especially solely on moments of individual quality. I think I was watching Gary Neville on Monday Night Football the other night, and he was dead on what he was saying. United, they don't have a game plan. They don't, especially without the ball, they don't know how to set up. They don't seem to have a shape. They don't seem to have a plan. They just seem to rely on moments of brilliance. They play in stages, United, and they can turn up, especially against the better sides. I've seen it as well. It becomes a pattern. You see them. They play against these so-called lesser sides, and they might get turned over. But when it comes to these big games, they seem to just turn it on for some reason, and it wouldn't surprise me if United went and battered Atalanta 4-0 tonight. It really wouldn't surprise me. But against a team like Atalanta, you've got to be on it. You can't be like Villarreal the other week, where they scrapped a 2-1 win, Ronaldo scoring last minute with a bit of a deflected effort towards him. They need to be on it tonight. They need to absolutely heads on the ball tonight. Otherwise, Atalanta will pick you apart. Atalanta might not be the team that they've been over previous seasons. They seem to be Atalanta. They seem to be the anti-Italian way of playing. We associate teams with Italy purely on defensive work, but Atalanta are a goal-scoring machine when they are in the mood. So if United really don't pull their socks up tonight, Atalanta will pick you apart. So yeah, Ollie needs to play strongest possible 11 and hope for the best.
Looking across to the other Premier League game, other Premier League side in action, Ian, tonight, and that's Chelsea. We talked about them on Sunday's show, getting back to winning ways after that double defeat to City and Juventus. They beat Southampton before the break. They did make heavy work of winning against Brentford at the weekend, but they got through. They're still top of the league. They are seemingly maybe not quite as bulletproof as they were in the opening weeks of the season, but when you're pushing for major trophies, when you're pushing to win titles, you do have to go through these periods, and the key thing is to still keep winning games. And I said it on the Sunday show that maybe the edge has been taking them off them a little bit, but as I say, they're still top of the Premier League, they're still winning games, they've recovered from what could have been a bit of a sticky situation with losing to City and then losing to Juventus, and they're going to go out against Malmo tonight, and you'd fully expect them to just sweep on and get 3 points.
Yeah, well, you'd expect that, but sometimes these are the banana skins of European football when you take things for granted, because don't forget, as we mentioned before, that for these sides, the chance to play against teams like Chelsea is a big day, and for the players involved in the Malmo side, they're going to have this opportunity to play against some world-class players, something that they didn't obviously have that opportunity every single week, and they're going to be up for it. Of course they are. Now, Chelsea should, in theory, have enough strength for this, but there is talk of some players being rested, particularly Lukaku. Apparently he's being overworked, blimey, and they say the nurses have it tough. So he's gonna get potentially a night off, or at least on the bench, and Mason Mount as well, rested possibly after the international break. It's, you know, they're working, you know, a good couple of days a week here, these guys. You've got to give them their time off. I know. So there is that. But obviously, even without those two players, Chelsea should have enough. But as I say, when sides, I've seen sides before put out, you know, not second strings, but weakened sides, if you like, to rest some of their key players. And, you know, sometimes it can come back and bite you. I don't think it will with Chelsea. But you just never know. I think if there is going to be a surprise tonight, I suspect that might be it.
Before we move to the end of the show, call these two games for me, guys. Matt, we'll go to you first. United, Atalanta, Chelsea, Malmo. Give us your prediction.
I'm going to go 2-1 Atalanta and 3-0 to Chelsea against Malmo.
Okay, so one each in terms of Premier League wins. Ian, would you agree?
Yeah, on balance, just about. I think certainly Chelsea are going to beat Malmo. Malmo haven't had a victory at all. They're just shipping goals for fun. Actually, Malmo haven't actually scored a goal in the Champions League.
Nothing to lose,
so
though, have they? That's what it is that you're saying there, Ian. These teams, yeah, that just nothing to lose. Yeah. They might as well go for it.
I know, you know, the trip to London gets them out of the house, you know, all sorts of things might happen. But yeah, I do fancy Chelsea will do it. I think they might make hard work of it, but I think they'll sort it out.
Yeah, fair enough. And one bit of breaking news that's coming in the last half an hour, probably completely expected, which is that Steve Bruce has left his position at Newcastle United just 13 days into the takeover from the Saudi Arabian-backed PIF investment group. Bruce is gone.
It's such a shame that Marl is not on the pod for this.
It is indeed. Well, he's either crying into a pillow or cracking open the champagne. I'll have to give him a message.
I reckon he's outside St. James's Park, like the thousands of them the other week. Just Marl on his own with a can of Carlin, just having a party.
with the faint strains of Local Hero by Dire Straits coming through his windows.
I want to grab both your takes on this as well, but before we do, I'm just reading a quote from Bruce, and I've got to be honest, I had to double check that this was real, because I've been laughing to myself with my mic turned down. This is an actual quote from Steve Bruce on the back of his official statement. It's been a very, very tough time in the last few days. To be honest, I never really wanted to be in this position, and to feel that people wanted me to fail is very difficult. To constantly read comments from people saying that I would fail, saying that I was useless, was very, very difficult. To be called that every single day, and including comments such as fat waste of space, tactically inept cabbage head, is very, very difficult. And that has been the case from day one. Now, I'll be honest, I didn't know Steve Bruce was in on the cabbage head comments. But Ian, when you look at this is a Premier League manager talking about being called a cabbage head in his exit press conference from being a Premier League manager. It does, we can talk about the situation with Steve Bruce and some of the shortcomings, but this does illustrate how toxic his relationship with the Newcastle fans has become.
Sorry, I should have laughed at that, because that's quite cruel. But has he been reading Marley's comments about him? Because I'm sure I've heard Marley refer to him as a cabbage on a few occasions. But I think I was listening to, again, Gary Neville talk about he felt sorry for him, because it was no other person in any other job would go through what he's been through, like in terms of like the way he's been just like thrown out for the wolves, you know, to feed on. He hasn't helped himself, obviously, with his results, but, you know, he's a human being at the end of the day. And, you know, Steve Bruce, yeah, he's got connections to Man United and stuff like that. And, you know, he's probably not my most favourite. But, you know, as a human being, I think he's a decent guy. He's softly spoken. He seems to come across well in his presses. And I don't like seeing stuff like that being thrown around about people. You know what I mean? I know I laughed there in the build-up, but it's just because it was completely caught me off guard. You know, you don't expect someone to refer to himself as a fat cabbage head. You know what I mean?
I cabbage head.
You know what I mean? That, you don't expect that. So, you know, what we was expecting. I think it's come a lot later than what I thought. I thought it would have been straight after the Tottenham game, to be honest. But, you know, I wish him all the best in his future endeavours, and I don't think he's done in a game of football. He's managed 1,000 games now. He's not managed his 1,001st yet. But, yeah, over 1,000 games as a manager, he's won more games than he's lost. So, yeah, I think he's still got a place in the game, and I wish Brucey all the best.
Yeah, life begins at 1,001, Bruce. Yeah, I agree. Ian, just quickly on the situation, Graham Jones is going to take charge this weekend against Palace. Obviously, the big focus is now going to be on who takes over. Just looking at some of the odds, there's a big gap between the top two and everyone else. And as it stands, it's Paulo Fonseca joint with Eddie Howe. Jones is going to be in temporary charge this weekend. He might even be given the extra game, the Chelsea game next weekend if it's not sorted. Where do Newcastle go from here?
Well, they certainly need to get a manager and back him. You know, that's the thing. And I think the problem now is that because of the amount of expectation there is in Newcastle, and it is an arrogance now that is around Newcastle even more than ever it was. Obviously, they think they've got big aspirations, so you know, Big Sam to the end of the season ain't going to cut it. It's going to have to be like a well known name. I mean, I would
the Triceratops
love it if they brought, in the same way as, yeah, just bring back the Triceratops, please,
please.
For the rest of this season. Just to see what he can do. You know, see what Sam Allardyce can do with the richest club in the world. It'll be just absolutely. Maybe we'll see his true potential. But anyway, I don't think that's going to happen, unfortunately. So they're going to get a name in. The thing is, there's not a lot you can do in the transfer window that's coming up. You know, you're going to be dealing with mercenaries, and that's going to be their thing. They're going to have all sorts of players. Money does not equal success. You know, experienced managers might equal success, and some shrewd investments might equal success, but it's a long-term thing. Mm. You know, you look at the history, and I think it was Arsene Wenger that pointed this out a while ago. I watched an interview with him, and he had a point. You look at teams who change their manager mid-season and see how much difference it makes. And rarely does it make a massive difference. Yes, it might stop you getting relegated, but bringing a different manager in at this stage of the season isn't going to mean you're going to be finishing in the top three.
No.
Because you can't do it. You know, it takes a long time. As you know, Matt, with Man City, you can't make... It's not an overnight thing. When rich people come in and buy your club, you can't just clear them all out what you've got, because you've still got to pay them, and they want to play. You can't. It just doesn't work like that. It's going to take
at least five years to get where everybody's
hoping. Yeah. Hey, look, the Newcastle Chronicle have simulated what life would be like under Eddie Howe at Newcastle United. And in case you're wondering, they've fed all the things in the aspects of Eddie Howe's career, the sort of players that he might buy, fed it into the master computer, and they reckon that they would finish 15th. You know, they might be looking beyond Eddie Howe, unfortunately, on that one. But they do reckon that over time, you know, that Newcastle will climb up the Premier League table. But it is going to be a year-on-year sort of thing, so another 4 or 5 years or so. But, who do you get now? It's got to be a manager. Don't want Champions League football for a year at least.
Well, for me, they need to focus solely on building a team around Alan Saint-Maximin, who's by far their best player, and just surviving in the Premier League. Because if they survive in the Premier League, then they've got, you know, time to then build on that. Then, because if they get relegated to the Championship, let's have it right, guys. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that they can get relegated. They get relegated, and they're the richest club in world football. You know, what's that going to do for them? They might not get out of the Championship for another 2 years. So then that's all their plans messed up. So what they need to focus on, building a team around Saint-Maximin, surviving in the Premier League, and then go from there. That's what they need to do for me.
Yeah, and just quickly, any Newcastle fans that are worried about Sam Allardyce coming back to St James's Park, I'm just looking at some of the numbers here. He's 100-1 to take over. And if you wanted an example of how ridiculous a market that is, the two names that he's sandwiched in between are Jurgen Klopp and Shola Amiobi. So I think that shows how likely
wow.
Sam Allardyce is.
Bring Shearer back.
That shows that... Yeah, that shows how likely Sam Allardyce is. Two very different reasons for why Jurgen Klopp and Sola Amiobi won't be rocking up at St James's Park. Right, a bit of a ridiculous end to a bit of a ridiculous few days in Premier League football. We're going to wrap it up there. Ian, Matt, as always, thanks so much for your time.
Nice one.
Thank you.
Great stuff indeed. Jim, Marley and Niall will be back tomorrow. Marley probably with steam coming out of his ears,
yeah,
talking about Bruce Gates, Cabbage Head, etc. Looking at the games from tonight, reviewing Manchester United and Chelsea, and also asking the big question, what next for Newcastle? Don't forget to check out that show, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.